Hello, you're very welcome to the podcast series Driving Progress with Audi. I'm the host, Emma Dabaru, and in the upcoming episodes, I'll be speaking to Audi Ireland brand ambassadors to explore how they live their passions and beliefs and find out what has driven them to be successful and progressive in their chosen fields. We welcome you to experience Progress with Audi. For our next episode, I'd now like to welcome Paul Galvin, a former Gaelic football star, a writer, a fashion designer, and a brand ambassador for Audi Cork. Welcome, Paul.
Thanks, Emma. Pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You're most welcome. I'm looking forward to our conversation. So, what would you say defines you as a person?
I don't really have that figured out, really. I suppose I should have at this stage of my life, but I don't know. I think other people define you more than you define yourself, I think. I just pursue things like, you know, I think I pursue things. Sport probably would have defined me once upon a time. Football would have defined me. And nowadays I kind of pursue creative pursuits, like probably define me to myself. But I don't know what that means in the wider context, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's so interesting. I think you're bang on the money there, that other people define you more than you define yourself. That really resonates.
Yeah, I think so.
So your career has, you know, started with sports and then moved into design. Do you see like a big cleavage between those two things, or is there something of a sympathy between them?
I've never heard that word used in that context before, cleavage, by the way. Very interesting. Only an author could do
that.
Only an
author
could do that. Only a writer like yourself and an author could do that. I must remember that for future reference, actually. So, career, football would have defined me, I suppose, for a while. And nowadays, I maybe to some, the fashion and business maybe defines me to some, I don't know. Is there a sympathy or, as you put it, a cleavage between the two of them? I think that there is. In some ways, but to kind of express that kind of sympathy would be probably I'd be getting very deep if I tried to express the sympathies or the similarities that I see between design and sport. But there are some, you know. I look at a playing pitch, a Gaelic football playing pitch, and I see design everywhere, you know. So from the stand, the stadium, the pitch itself, the dressing rooms, the playing kit, the football boots, the football itself, all these elements of sport were designed and you know, the whole world is designed. So I think sport is highly designed, but, you know, I suppose the emotion of sport maybe overrides probably your ability to kind of see it as a kind of a design-led type of a thing, maybe. I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I used to imagine design as something like very discreet and contained. It's like a very specific thing that like doesn't really have anything to do with me. And then I realized this profound moment that like everything is design, and like design is everything. And I was just like, wow, it actually really shifted my perspective on how I thought about so many things.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense to me as well. I think everything is designed, you know what I mean? Everything I see around me is designed. And there was a designer, a graphic designer, an industrial designer, an architect, an auto designer, tech designer, you know what I mean? I have a teacup here in front of me lying.
Yeah.
That was designed. So, yeah, I would see the world as being a highly designed
it's
place.
It's a lovely teacup.
Yeah, no, and tea's nice too.
Tea's gorgeous. Oh, actually, do you know about fractal design? I recently, well, not a few years ago now, when I was writing my first book, I started kind of researching fractal design in relation to hairstyling patterns. But fractals are like the patterns that are also found in nature. So like our lungs are fractal. I think our brains are fractal. Coastlines are often fractal.
That's fascinating, yeah. The minute I heard the word fractal there, I want to know more because I don't understand it. But you remind me of a stage designer. There's a woman called Ez Devlin, who's a stage designer, theatre designer, has done stage design for Jay-Z, Kanye West, Adele, Beyonce, the whole lot of them, but also does theatre design and museum design and that kind of a thing. But she based one of her sets that she created was actually based on a lung, bronchioles around a human lung. She was looking at trees and tree branches and lung human lung structure for inspiration. Yeah, yeah, very interesting woman, Es Devlin.
I'm going to make a little note of that.
Yeah, you should check her out. I think you'd like her, especially in your own line of work. But we actually called my daughter. I have a daughter called Es that we called after Es Devlin.
Oh wow! So she's a big influence on you, or inspiration.
Yeah, I think she's brilliant. Yeah, I do. I think she's one of the great creative minds, and she kind of transcends then fashion design, stage design, theatre design, museum spaces, retail spaces. So she's quite a big imprint on kind of culture. But basically, I must find out more about fractal design.
Yeah.
Emma.
Yeah. So, Paul, what does progress mean to you?
I don't know. I suppose it's lots of things. I suppose you think about it from a professional point of view and how, you know, how your professional life is progressing, your career path. I suppose that's kind of how I look at it primarily when I think of progress. How am I progressing in terms of my pursuits, be it business or in sport, or, you know, as a person, am I progressing creatively, and am I on a pathway? You know, I think professionally, you're always thinking of progress and improvement. I suppose then I think about my communications as well, like, and how my communications are progressing or improvement. Like, progress is like, it's like a byword for improvement, really. And like, I suppose my level of communication, my ability to communicate in my relationships, that I think is always a work in progress, and a one that I don't think you can ever ignore your ability or your inability to communicate in your relationships. I think it's fundamental, and I think it's a one that is probably one I need to stay mindful of, and I think in general, communication is a thing that we can always probably is always a work in progress.
That's so interesting, because, you know, when you think about people who just, I guess, have poor communication, and as a result, it impacts their relationships and the lives of everybody around them. But you tend to think of that person as just, you know, kind of set in stone almost as somebody who's like a poor communicator. But the idea that like we can actually always be addressing that and actually kind of becoming better at communicating sounds really obvious, but I'm just like, oh yeah, you don't just have to be a poor communicator. You can change that. And even if you're not a poor communicator in the first place, you can be kind of constantly becoming better at it, I guess, to meet your needs and those of the people around you.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it's almost so obvious you just forget about it and take it for granted, and you don't consider kind of the impact it might have on your quality of life. Actually, you know, can actually affect your quality of life. And I think it's a thing that probably, maybe it's become more prevalent or more kind of culturally kind of top of mind maybe in the last 2 years since we've been locked down, that people maybe started to examine their communication skills. My wife works in communication, so I'm probably, it's something that I'm more mindful of as well, because she would place an emphasis on it, so therefore I've begun to place an emphasis on it. But she does it day to day, and she's some very clever tricks for communication. So anyway, I do think that communication skills are a work in progress, and they're things that probably, if you give them a little bit of thought, can add to your quality of life.
In what ways do your like personal passions inform the work that you do and your career more generally?
Well, words are probably a personal passion, actually. Words and dictionaries and that are... Passion's a funny word. It's another one that you don't hear used a lot of amongst men, like, really. You know, we kind of relate it to sport more than anything, like, but even at that... Mm-hmm. Even at that, like, passion really to a man is like, it's a physical sporting celebration of a goal or a score or something like that, you know? So like, to apply it beyond that then is a bit of a challenge maybe. But anyway, words, like, I would probably...
No, I love that you're querying the, defining the terms, querying them. Again, I hadn't really considered that.
Yeah, language really would be kind of in terms of career, you know, if you're talking about, have you personal passions in terms of career, Well, then language and education. I was a teacher one time and I took education to kind of wanted to teach in a new way. So I just took this idea of education and started to tell stories through collections whereby I wasn't a history lover, really. Like I didn't, I know I did it in school, but I didn't study it in college. And to find meaning and find storytelling, I started to read and research words. So we'll say a word like my first collection, we'll say, with Duns was called Vanguard. And I started to research that word. It had a philosophical meaning, avant-garde. And then I find it has a military context in terms of it being a unit of a military formation. And then I'm thinking of ways how I can express this word vanguard of being at the forefront of a movement or the forefront of a military a formation. And I put myself in the position of being in Croke Park, listening to the national anthem before an All-Ireland final, and your team is here and the opposition team are there, and you're about to go to war and you're about to go into battle, and the Arondavian finishes. And that was my way of putting myself in a vanguard moment at the forefront of something about to go into battle. And if that makes any sense, that is how I might use words to tell stories. And that is something of a personal passion, I think, in my career anyway, for sure.
Yeah, it totally makes sense. When you were describing that scene, it was actually quite rousing. I was like, come on.
Yeah.
Gonna get up and sing the anthem. So yeah, absolutely. When it comes to progress, are there any particular moments in your life or career that really like stand out to you as particularly significant?
Yeah, I think writing a book. I wrote a book 7 or 8 years ago. That was a big step for me. It was a big progression. It allowed me to kind of bookend the stage of my life and move forward and make progress and actually just understand, articulate and kind of box off a whole stage of life and move on. So it was like living progress, really, in a way. You would understand, I think, maybe what I mean being a writer, an author. You know, you can only kind of, capture and just kind of move on, progress in life sometimes by writing things down, you know. And probably that book, that was 2014, that was a stage that that really, I think, stands out now in hindsight. Probably at the time I didn't see it as that, maybe, but now I can see it as being a real kind of a departure and a step forward, you know.
Yeah, that really resonates as well, actually. Yeah, kind of writing a book as a way of, I guess, processing.
Yeah, a chapter, literally a chapter, I suppose. That's what the word I was trying to capture there. It's actually a chapter, yeah, and then you can progress on to the next chapter after you write 25 chapters, maybe, and time for a new chapter then. And I think that was certainly an example of living progress for me anyway.
What would be something that people might not expect when they hear your name, something about you?
I don't know. Dictionaries. I like dictionaries. I like, I speak Irish, maybe. Speak Irish, fluent Irish.
I'm so deeply envious of that.
Yeah, Irish is important to me.
Lucky.
The Irish language is important to me. I like languages in general, but Irish in particular, I think, is it's just in me. I don't know, really know where it came from, but I suppose that's the thing about languages, you know. That's the thing about innate stuff, you know. Some people can build a MacBook, other people can design a car, and then it's just in you. So Irish language was just in me. I felt when I was young, I kind of just had it in me. And my mother had a little bit. I remember hearing my mother speak a bit of Irish when I was a young fella. She was counting, she'd always do it in Irish. And she's from kind of towards West Kerry direction. So I think now that I say it, that's where that actually comes from, probably. But
that's really interesting when you're saying it's just in you, because I actually feel like part of my frustration is like that it is also in me, but I can't express it because I can't speak it. So it's like something that is kind of in me, but I can't express. I'm actually going to the Gaeltacht this summer in Donegal to do like an immersive week of Irish. I'm gonna get it, because obviously I studied it in school, but in school I felt so resentful towards it. But I now realize it's really important. So I want to have like just a, not even like fluency, but I just want to be able to have like
articulation,
a bit of a chat, and to explore concepts. Yeah. There's concepts, I think, you know, that exist there that aren't in English, and I just want to kind of be able to access them.
Yeah, it's a funny thing. Like, it's a question of practice, really. Like, and practice is the one thing we don't seem to have time for in anything that we do, really. You know, like, practice is progress. Like, every time you practice something, you literally make immediate progress. Mm. And yet, we don't tend to place a huge value on practice, except if you're a specialist, like a pianist or an artist or a specialist. Then you'll practice your craft on a daily basis and you'll reach whatever level. You'll become the best. Yet we don't tend to find time to practice things then for ourselves that we think we'd like to get better at. So we just don't place a premium on practice, I don't find. And I think practice is progress. So it's the same with Irish.
Yeah,
I think that's
absolutely.
Irish. That's the Irish language. I think it's a practice thing because it's an articulation thing. And if you don't practice it regularly, it's like football and hurling. Your brain won't program and you won't be able to articulate the language the same as you won't be able to articulate the skill of the hurling or the football or whatever it might be as fluently as you might if you were to regularly practice it.
Yeah, I think practice is progress is very succinct. How important do you think attitude is when adapting to new environments?
Yeah, I think it's a key skill kind of for moving forward, being able to move forward and make progress in whatever context of life it might be. I think adaptability is very valuable, being able to kind of rationalise and cut through and make sense of situations and just kind of make the best of situations. Like, so you'd like to think, I think in the past I've been adaptable, you know, and I've been able to kind of make the most of things and make the best of things. But it's a one that, it's a really key one, but it's a hard one to kind of say, you know, it's a hard one to say you've got it nailed. I think it all depends on the context and the situation that you're in, you know.
As a writer, what do you yourself like to read? Are you a big reader?
I was a big reader. I was a better reader than I am now, but I'm reading mostly kids' books now at the moment, really, to be honest with you. I read a book every night, but it's a kids' book. And, like, you know, I'm reading an Irish kids' book now at the moment. And I bought a book over Christmas. I bought a book called Prison Break. It's like 38, 39 great daring prison escapes by prisoners. And that's kind of what I'm stuck in at the moment. But I'm not as great a reader as I was. I find Netflix now at the moment is kind of my library. Like, it's where I go for New York Times as well. I find the thing probably online. I read a lot of New York Times or I go to Netflix. Instead of going for a book, I tend to go to Netflix. But then I find I get the same kind of sustenance or whatever from Netflix as I used to get from books. So probably not the reader I was, to be honest.
Would you say that you are a naturally optimistic person?
I don't know. I think I'm more in the pragmatic side, I think. I think, like, career design and storytelling and creativity makes you optimistic. And like, if you're creatively minded, I think you're optimistic. I think you're an optimist. And I definitely find that. I think optimism is innate, like we were speaking about earlier. And I think you absolutely need optimism. Optimism is progress, like it is, like, if you're naturally, innately optimistic, I think you're always going to do well in life. Like, I sometimes struggle with this idea of positivity, and like this kind of positivity has been kind of commoditized now and commercialized by social media pages and platforms. And now you can decide to be, you can kind of fake positivity. I think optimism is more powerful. And if you have kind of an optimistic streak in you, I think you're on a good path and you'll make progress and you'll reach goals and you'll follow visions and you'll find your way, you know. So that'd be my take on it.
Do you think there's anything, you given the power of optimism, do you think that there's anything you can do to kind of like foster a more optimistic outlook in your life?
Yeah, it's all to do with your self-talk, like, you know what I mean? You can, I would have long time ago practiced a lot of, as a sportsman, I would have practiced a lot of positive visualization, positive self-talk, talking to myself about the things that I wanted to achieve and I would have done that every day. And I found that very powerful. And I found that I achieved all the things that I told myself I was going to achieve. Sometimes you need to do it out loud. And sometimes, you know, it's okay to do it yourself. Say it to yourself internally, but saying it out loud then makes it a little bit more real for you. And or I would have done it in the car now if there was anybody parked up beside me. They'd have been looking in the window going, well, what is this guy, who is this guy talking to? But I would have been big into that. I still am big into that, you know, but I think there's definitely a way that you can program yourself for success, you know, but there's a bit of programming required, like, and that's the hard part.
Thanks, Paul, for your time. It's much appreciated. And thanks very much for taking part in driving progress with Audi.
Pleasure, Emma. Thanks for having me.